Okay, that's your story anyways. All right. Good, I think we're set now. So if I'm too loud, which I know never happens, it's not my fault. All right, good. Well, let's see here. It probably doesn't happen much, but my wife is gone for a second straight Sunday. It's bad enough she's gone. I promise we're still together. And I know that's a big concern to some of you, but be not concerned. Most of the time we're joking when we fuss in here, and she is enjoying some mother-daughter time in Winston-Salem, and I don't know how mother-daughter it could be because my mother-in-law is with them, so no comments. So we're in Genesis 6, and I got this new microphone on, and it seems ultra-sensitive, so it must be male, and... Just on a roll, huh? Don't quit the day job. Is that what I heard? Yeah. All right. So let's go to Genesis chapter 6. We have some questions to answer today. And hopefully this bright light shining on my bald head won't blind anyone. I've already heard some comments. Won't say any names. But pretty soon, between Ben and Richard and myself and a couple others, we're taking over. Some of you would do well just to join on in. Some of you are joining in, you just don't know it, okay? And you don't have a spouse that either wants to hurt your feelings or you don't have a spouse yet to tell you that, but in any case. And they're all men, okay? I'm only speaking of men. All right, so here we are in Genesis chapter number 6, and we're going to begin reading roundabout verse number 10. Now, Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, let me just throw this first question up on the board. This was given to us by Brian Stevens about 2 weeks ago, and I, like most questions, forgot to answer it. And so let's talk about chapter 5, and let's look in particular at verse number, when Adam begot sons and daughters. Look at verse number 4. And the days of Adam after he had begotten Seth were 800 years, and he begat sons and daughters. And you're going to see it again in verse 7. Seth lived after he begot Enos 800 years, and he begot sons and daughters. And verse 10, Enos lived after he begot Canaan 815 years, and he begot sons and daughters. So you get the idea here. They're trying to get you to see that daughters are also being born, even though they're not being named in these genealogies. All right, real quick review. You might remember that I have proposed to you that Genesis 5 through Genesis chapter number 11 is one genealogy. Genesis 5 takes us from Adam through Seth to Noah, and Genesis 10 shows us Noah's three boys, and then in Genesis chapter 11 we wind up taking ourselves from Shem all the way to Abraham. Shem, Ham, Japheth, right, Shem, the chosen line all the way to Abraham. So, the question is, why are sons and daughters mentioned in Genesis 5 genealogy, but only sons are mentioned in Genesis 10? If you look over at Genesis 10 really quick, and remember we have two aisles. So, what is this aisle here? This is the episode of what? The flood, right? And then we have genealogy of chapter number 10, taking us through all three sons of Noah, and then here we have another interruption into your genealogy, and what is it? Tower of Babel, that's right. So, of course, my contention is really that it's one genealogy with two interruptions. Righto. Okay. All right. So, the question is, why are daughters mentioned in Genesis 5 and not in chapter 10? Because in chapter 10, you'll see, verse 2, for instance, the son of Japheth, Gomer, and Magog, and Madai, and Javan, and Tubal, and Meshech, and Tyrus. And remember the secret to reading through long names? Do it fast before anyone has a chance to examine the pronunciation marks, okay? Real fast. The sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, and Ripha, and Togarma, right? Just mow on through them, and you're a good public reader before anyone even knows any different. All right? So a question again, why are daughters mentioned in chapter 5? Well, my contention is that chapter 5's mission is to build us up and get us ready for chapter 6 and verse 1. Look at chapter 6 and verse number 1. Chapter 6 and verse 1 says, it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born to them. So that looks like a summary, right, of chapter 5, right? Because we're about to get into something that involves the daughters of men. And we've already talked about it in depth, so if you want to hear that again, You're going to have to get on sermon audio and do a little bit of homework. But you might remember in verse 2, the sons of God saw the daughters of men. So the reason daughters are mentioned in chapter 5's genealogy is because chapter 6 gives us a story that involves the daughters that are being born to these men. So everything is on purpose. Does that make sense? You satisfied with that answer? All right. In chapter 11, then, there's no episode in chapter 11 requiring the extra information in the genealogy in chapter 10. So that's my answer for that. All right, next question. And this one comes from Corbin. At the end of last week's lesson, he asked me something that tripped me up a little bit, and that's good because I need a little bit of intellectual accountability and that kind of thing. If it looks like I'm saying something that's hard to accept, such as something I said last week, which is something I've believed, I think, most of my life, which is that the ark was 120 years being built, and that the reason I believe that was chapter 6 and verse number 3. And the Lord said, "My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. And then in verse number 7, and the Lord said, "I will destroy man." And verse number 8, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Well, here was my assumption. My assumption was that 120 years left of human history until the flood, God told Noah, "You're going to have the ark. You're going to build an ark because I'm going to destroy it." Well, I made an assumption. And the assumption really was not a good assumption, which was that immediately upon that 120-year mark, God brought a flood, or God was promising to bring a flood and started Noah to building the ark. My further statement was also that Shem, Ham, and Japheth, who were born at... Remember I showed you a verse in Genesis 7 or 8 that talked about how old Noah was when the flood came? How old was he? Look at chapter 7, verse 6. 600. So if he started building the ark immediately upon chapter 6 and verse 3, how old was he when he started building the ark? 480. How old were his sons when he was... How old was he? How old were his sons when he was born? That's a strange one. I think they might have been... Anyway, so how old was he when his sons were born in chapter 5 and verse 32? So if he started building the ark at 480 and his sons came along when he was 500, that means he'd been building the ark for 20 years by the time his sons were born, and that is exactly what I said. But I was wrong. Quite frankly, I was wrong. Look at chapter 6 and verse number 10. All right? Look at chapter 6 and verse number 10. And it says, Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Okay, so how old is Noah right there in chapter 6, verse 10? 500. And we get that from what verse? Chapter 5, verse 32. Very good. All right, verse 11. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the ark. Make thee an ark of gopher wood." Okay, so in verse 10, we have Noah's sons being born, yes? And we have the direction for the ark coming in verse 14. So chronologically, it makes pretty good sense, doesn't it? To say that the ark was constructed sometime, or at least was beginning to be constructed sometime after the birth of Noah's sons, or we should say in the last 100 years before the flood, which came in Noah's 600th year. Got it? Sons were born in his... So how old were his sons when the ark came, or when the flood came? 100 years old. Okay, so I mean, sounds like we're in math class, and I guess we sort of are. But numbers are important. Numbers are important. So I hope that's clear, that the ark was constructed at some point after Shem, Ham, and Japheth were born, according to the chronology of verse 10 through verse 14. So that was good. I learned something there. Amen. All right, now let's answer the third question. First, we're going to talk about the design of the ark, and then I'm going to call some help up here to help teach. But before he comes up here, I want to just read through verse 14, all right? Verse 14, "Make thee an ark of gopher wood." Now, I've read lots of sources. No one is entirely sure what kind of wood this is. We don't go out and find gopher trees, okay? We see a lot of pictures throwing gopher balls, but no gopher trees, okay? So, "Make thee an ark of gopher wood." As a matter of fact, the New Scofield Bible substitutes a word in there, shittim wood. So, "Make thee an ark of gopher wood. Room shalt thou make in the ark." So, there's rooms in the ark, and the Greek word behind, or the Hebrew word behind rooms, there's nests. Make little nests in the ark, and you'll pitch it within and without with pitch. And a lot of the old earth creationists say, see that? There was millions of years had passed because you have these petroleum products that came from decomposed animals in the earth. Well, it doesn't say that it was petroleum-based pitch, though. It could have been tree sap. It could have been any number of things that keep something impenetrable, or I should say, resistant to water. So we have pitch within and without. Verse 15, this is the fashion which thou shalt make of it. The length of the ark should be 300 cubits. All righty then. Well, I'm going to use some crazy stuff here. The length of the ark will be 300 cubits. So let's just say that that a cubit is the most conservative that I've seen it. Now, here's what you usually do. You usually take the odd man and kick him out, right? So if you hear scholar, 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 and they all seemingly agree, probably you're in the ballpark. Well, I've read a lot of guys that say you had an 18-inch cubit, you had a 20-inch long cubit, and you had a 22-inch Egyptian cubit. And really, we're just not sure what. Well, you understand now that the case for a universal flood is assisted with the idea of a huge boat. In other words, if all you had to do is move west, move east, and be out of the range of the flood, you're good, right? Or if he only needed the animals that were in that habitat, in that locality, he wouldn't need a boat this size. Of course, we're making a lot of assumptions. For one thing, we're saying an ark is a boat, when really the word behind ark means box. So we're probably dealing here with a barge-shaped vessel rather than a, you know, the typical, help me out, Navy man. Huh? Ship. What would be the shape of that bow at the front? What would you call that? There's got to be a Navy term, brother. And now that you are a Master Chief Petty Officer? When is that going to be anyway? Been selected for that recently. That's pretty awesome. I only hear those in movies. I don't think I've ever met a real live one, so. Usually it's in movies about Billy Sunday and other assorted. Okay, so, all right. So, I cannot officially recommend that movie. All right. So, we have this ark that is 300 cubits long. And if we go with the most conservative estimate, a cubit is 18 inches, then we're dealing with how many feet long? 450 feet. All right. A football field. How long is a football field in feet? All right, let's go goalpost to goalpost. How long is an end zone? 10 yards. So we got about 30 feet, right? So you got one on each end. Really? You got ends on each end. Thank you, Nate. All right, so we got 360. Always giving me the good stuff. All right, so the football field is 360 feet, and this is 400. So you got 90 feet longer than a football field. That's pretty awesome. And then you see in verse number 15, the length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits. And so I'm going to do my best here to do this sort of breadth. All right, so its breadth is 50 cubits. All right, so how wide is it? Right, we're looking at it from the air. That's what we're going to do because I am not a three-dimensional writer. Okay, so all right, so 50 cubits. How wide is that? 75 feet. Okay, so football field. I read this morning because I thought, man, I got to know how it's 160 feet wide. Is that right? Is anyone? Contest that? 160 feet wide. So this is a little bit less than the width of a football field, but it's 90 feet longer than a football field. And how tall is it? How tall is it? In verse number 15, the height of it is 30 cubits. So again, we're going to look at it from the, this is the above view. Mm-hmm. Isn't that nice? And then we're going to, go with the side view, okay? Yay. All right, so we got 450 feet here, and then this, the side view, this is height, is 30 cubits, okay? And so how tall is that? 45 feet. All right, that comes to roughly 1,500,000 cubic feet of space, okay? 1,500,000 cubic feet of space, which is equal to, no, I'm going to stop talking. Maybe I'm stealing some of Adam's work here. But before he gets up here, I just wanted you to see that not only, come on up here. Come on up here. And what I haven't spoiled, you share with us. And I wanted to see what Adam came up with to answer the question, how did all those animals fit in the ark? So go ahead, brother.
All right, cool. No we got a good start with me here. So this is actually pretty good. And there's three points that I wanted to make as far as with trying to prove how all the animals could have fit inside of the ark. And I hit the dimensions of the ark, which is what we have a good start on right here. The number of animals that could have been in the ark, and then also the size of the animals.
Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. And now it's my silliness. Pastor Sean's going to dock my pay for a year. Just kidding. Just kidding. No.
Do you want me to start over?
No, go ahead.
Okay, right on. All right, so basically, we started with the dimensions, right? We have the length, we have the width, and then we have the height. So how long is a cubit? You know, he already kind of covered that. The length of a cubit back then was, it differed, but it's from the length of your elbow to the length of, or to the tip of your longest finger.
Sure.
Fine. Okay, so, and we got a good start on the actual dimensions, the length, the width, and the height. And it said that that because of the dimensions, it could be equated to, like, the size of a modern-day aircraft carrier. So that's pretty big. And if we're talking about carrying capacity of this, and you guys know, like, a railway car or, like, a Connex or something like that, you guys familiar with that if I use that? Okay, so cool.
A boxcar, stock car.
Boxcar, okay. That's a good one. So 569 of those is the carrying capacity of, is roughly the ark.
Hold on, let's just confirm here. So you're saying that about 550, give or take a few, railroad boxcars could fit on the ark?
Yes.
Because it has three stories and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so, okay, got it. All right, continue.
Okay, cool. So with that established, with the dimensions established, the next part that I wanted to move to was the animals. Now, let me ask you this. Like, if, you know, did Noah need to bring every single breed of every single type of animal onto the ark? No. No, there's, when you look at, like, for example, canines, there's an enormous amount of genetic variation in the DNA of canines. And so it allows for, you know, the potentiality of different types or different breeds of dogs is enormous, even when you start with two types of canines. So Noah didn't need to bring all the different breeds of dogs onto the ark. He could have brought wolves.
Imagine if he did. Oh, my goodness.
It'd be insane. All right, so, and so basically what we have is the number of animals that scientists think that he would have needed to bring onto the ark in order to repopulate the entire Earth was anywhere from 16,000 to 50,000 animals. And so 50,000 is a very generous number.
So 50,000 animals, 15 or 50?
50.
50,000 animals. Okay, I want to rehearse this for the question. 50,000 animals to fit on the ark.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll use 50,000, all right, since that's the most liberal number out there, and it includes things like, you know, animals that have gone extinct since that time. We'll use 50,000. And so that brings me to the last point, which is the actual size of the animals. Now, animals vary in size and, you know, shape and everything else like that, but a vast majority of animals that live on Earth are about the same size as, or less than, smaller than a sheep, right? So I think if we use that as an average, we could probably figure out, or get a good idea of, you know, how many animals would be able to fill up, or what the carrying capacity, if the carrying capacity of the ark would be enough to house all 50,000 of those animals.
All right, so you're suggesting possibly 50,000 animals the size of a sheep or smaller.
Yes.
Now, whether someone out there says, look, a giraffe falls 6 feet when it's born, I know for a fact that that thing is bigger than a sheep, and perhaps it is. That would be, but what would kind of average the size of an animal down? Beavers, right? Beavers probably had to get on the ark. And are they the size of sheep?
They're smaller.
Hope not. But hope also not. Nate, you have not seen a beaver the size of a sheep. Put your hand down. I'm beating you to it. Huh?
Why are we assuming Noah brought full grown animals?
Okay,
point that I was
good question. Answer. Why are we assuming Noah brought full? Are you assuming Noah brought full grown animals?
Some of them, I was thinking more of the, or some of the information that I was looking at says that some of the larger animals or some of the more aggressive ones could have been brought in during their infancy to, you know, kind of lessen some of the problems that you would encounter with that.
And if they're in their infancy, probably not reproducing during that year on the ark.
Yes.
Okay. What? Are you saying something that objectionable to all audiences? Okay.
Okay, so this is, you know, for the next point is basically this. So in the size of the animals, if the average size is a sheep, okay, then we know that inside of like the boxcars, whenever they, you know, ship animals and stuff like that, it's about 240 sheep will fit inside of a double-deck boxcar or rail car or whatever. And so when you take 240 for the carrying capacity of one car and you multiply it times the number of boxcars that would have fit on the side of the ark, the number that you come up with is about 136,000 animals is the carrying capacity of the ark. And, you know, we're only filling up about a third of it if we're using that liberal number of 50,000.
And that's a liberal number.
Exactly.
That includes the two and the two. That includes two by two and includes the five of the clean animals, the five extra, because they came in by sevens. We'll find out in later chapters, right?
Right. And so basically, what you're left over with is about two-thirds of the ark is still empty space that's not being taken up by animals.
All right, before you take Corbin's question, I just wanted to point out that we're not talking about a surface here that is just 90 feet longer than a football field and about half the width of a football field. You're talking about three of those. It's three stories. Okay, go ahead and take Corbin's question.
And then let me finish the last part, and then I'll.
Yeah, he's still sick of people butting in that he's going to wait till he's done.
Shut up. No, and so basically, the other two-thirds of the ship could have been used to, for the provisions that would be needed for the animals for that entire year, for Noah and his family and all the other.
So they had a penthouse. They could have had the whole top floor for the Noah family, and then the second floor for the provisions, and the poo deck down there where the animals could be, right? Okay.
Definitely. Right. What's your question, man? No, I did not go through and calculate that. But one important thing, though, is that some of the information that I was looking at is that, you know, during dark and cold times, a lot of animals typically hibernate, and so that may have been part of the that may have been something that God used to cut down on the amount of food consumption.
And they might have, and the amount of labor to clean nests.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's your other question? Have you calculated?
Well, the whole 1,500,000 cubic feet.
Uh-huh.
Now, since you're sticking to three decks, you're actually dealing with surface area, not cubic feet. So did you actually take into account the surface area that each animal would take up? And then, because even if you have three decks, that's still not 1,500,000 cubic feet.
Yeah, it is.
You can't stack
this. These three dimensions times each other is about 1.45 cubic feet. No, of course you can't. I mean, I wouldn't. But if you have three floors in the ark, is it possible that they put several layers, several levels, like they would in a stock car? No one's going to say, "Hey, there's a double-decker stock car."
Is that still a three-deck ark?
It depends on if you are constructing an ark or constructing cages.
Also, keep in mind that roughly two-thirds of the ship was left over. You know, and though you can't stack animals on top of each other, you can stop stuff like hay on top of each other.
Yeah.
You know, on top of itself.
Yeah. All right, so we got to repeat the question. Did Noah use, say it again.
Did Noah use each type of food specific for each animal?
So did Noah use, was he an agricultural genius and just knew exactly what kind of food each animal needed? And
I think that, you know, God provide, if, you know, if that was the case, I think that God definitely would have provided everything.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, like, what each, you know, I don't know if Noah knew every single animal's, like, you know, what they needed to survive, but I know that God definitely would have provided. If he could bring all those animals onto a ship and then help him build something the size of an aircraft carrier in the short amount of time he did with the help of his family, and that's it. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that God could have given him the information that he needed for each animal, for what they would need for the entire time, the duration that they were on the ark.
You have a comment? Okay, Eugene has a comment over here.
Verse 21 answers it.
Read verse 21.
I don't have a Bible. Yes, I do. Never mind.
Chapter 6, right?
Yeah. Okay. Chapter 6, verse 21. And take thou unto thee all the food that is eaten, and thou shalt gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them.
I'll bet you can learn a lot in 500 years. And I'll just bet that Noah knew a ton about animals. Good. Do you have anything other, any other material for us, brother?
We got another question.
All right, let's go over here.
I
That's probably true.
And especially if they were younger animals, you know, they would probably be on a vegetarian-based diet.
Yeah, we have good reason to believe that till after the flood, that the meat for the animals, the meat for the human beings, was the herb of the field and vegetation, that kind of thing. Appreciate it. Thanks, Adam. Oh, okay, come on over here. Right, and let's talk about the miracle thing for a minute, because a lot of people want to escape the whole reality of miracles. And here's the thing. It all begins with creation. If you don't have a problem believing that God created light by speaking, you won't have a problem with believing he could bring animals and keep them sedated on an ark for a minute. By the way, Paul used that same argument in front of King Agrippa in Acts chapter 26, verse 8, with the resurrection. Not with the ark, which arguably is a miracle, but with the resurrection. He said, why is it an incredible thing to you that God should raise the dead? And what was his argument? His argument was, if God can breathe life into dust and make it a living soul, why is it hard for you to believe he can take that same dust that's in a grave somewhere and do it again? All right, so the real issue is, do you believe God is the creator or don't you? Because if you don't, then no wonder you try to say when Jesus was walking on the water, he was really walking on stones in shallow water. No wonder you sound like an idiot. Okay, that's what liberal theologians sound like, because they decide that God's really not God. And then you get back to the whole argument, well, then who is? Well, nothing. The matter is. Oh, matter is. Okay, that makes all the sense in the world. Matter is God. Right, gotcha. I think I'll keep what I've got. All right, over here. Thanks, Adam. That was awesome. Appreciate it.
Right, no worries. Thanks.
I just wanted to make one last comment.
Okay. Okay.
They're not going to be vicious towards each other anyway, and that's nothing miraculous. That's just...
All right, so let me repeat that. She's saying that when an animal, and I'm not going to get it verbatim, forgive my inadequacy here, but when an animal is young, it doesn't get real territorial. My young puppies do, sort of, but that's because they're fighting over a squeaky toy, you know, squeaky toy. But if they're not meat eaters especially, you're not going to have to worry about that on the ark. You know, if they're in hibernative state, then you're not going to have to worry about them being real territorial. And, oh, by the way, there are nests. There are rooms on those three floors. So to answer a question that might have been voiced before, I think that you can both say that the ark had three stories and that each individual nest had multiple stories. I'm okay with that. I don't think that it's untrue to the text. So we're going to move ahead because I want to answer this question. All right. Do the giants of Genesis 6:4 make it through the flood? Is that your question? Oh, dinosaurs. Well, that's a good question for next week. All right, so we're going to talk about that. Genesis chapter 6 and verse 4, so let's look at it real quick. This question was, I think, asked, and it's a good one. I think it was asked by Corbin, and I think a couple others might have asked that. I think Randy Rao might have asked that too. So Genesis 6, look at verse 4. There were giants in the earth in those days. And remember, we presumed, and it's my best answer until I hear a better one. So maybe this week someone can educate me. But my best answer is contextually that the giants were the offspring of the sons of God and the daughters of men because of the contextual flow between verses 1 and 4. Verse 4, there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, they bare children to them. The same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. And I might have mentioned it in the lesson called Who Are the Sons of God? But I would flip this over, but I think Leah was drawing. Yep, she sure was. It's the daughters of men. So, do giants actually make it through the flood? Well, let's look at some Bible references here. And if you would do me a favor, maybe write these references down in the margin of your Bible as we get to them, okay? Just write them right next to Genesis 6:4. Go ahead and mark all 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 references down. I'll give you a minute to do that. Then we're going to go look at them and answer the question, did giants make it through the flood? And then, of course, there'll be probably 6 or 8 follow-on questions, because if we say no, okay, we're good. Then where did Goliath come from? If we say yes, then someone's going to say, well, what was the point of the flood then if it didn't wipe them all out? So really, it's like one of those questions of, you know, have you stopped whipping your kids yet? I mean, if you say yes, that means you once did. And if you say no, it means that you still are. So you can't win either way. And go ahead.
Hey, while people are writing this down, I just wanted to validate something you said earlier about okay. the different types of cubits. 2 Chronicles 3:3 talks about when Solomon was building a temple, and he said that he used the old cubit.
Okay. 2 Chronicles 3:3.
And then in Ezekiel 43:13, it mm-hmm. talks about building the altar, and it talks about one cubit plus a handbreadth.
Where's that at?
Ezekiel 43:13.
All right. I'm going to look that up. Okay. And I'll probably send it out in the follow-up email this afternoon. So thank you. All right. So Numbers. Look at Numbers 13:33, would you please? Numbers 13:33. Okay, the context is that you have spies going into Canaan land. How many were there? 12, that's right. 10 were bad and 2 were good. Remember the song? Yeah, sure you do. You've been in church a while. You might remember that. And then, so the 10 came back and said, we have seen this. All right, so look at verse 32, Numbers 13. They brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants. So it looks like they're saying we saw men of great stature, and then we saw giants, the sons of Anak. Okay, so he identifies who the giants are that they saw. And by the way, you might see up on the board that the word in Genesis 6:4 behind giants is only used one other place, and it's right here. So the Nephilim, all right, that is the Hebrew word, Nephilim. And again, being not a Hebrew student, again, the key to getting through that is saying it really fast before anyone checks their pronunciation guide on Blue Letter Bible on their iPhone, okay? So 13:33, we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our sight, we were in our sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. Now look back at verse 22. Who are these sons of Anak? And they ascended by the south. Okay, so they're talking about their journey. They ascended, the 12 spies of the Hebrews, ascended by the south, came unto Hebron. There Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were. Now, Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Okay, so you have three sons of Anak who are called giants in verse 33. They're named in verse 22. There are three of them. Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai. Again, I'm probably saying that in southeastern American dialect, okay? So, good luck. All right. So, one other place giants are mentioned, and it looks like the Canaan conquest. That happened how many years after this recon mission? Around 40. All right. So, about 40 years later, they go in and they do something about these giants. So, look at Joshua 11 and verse 22. By the way, the conquest, is that before or after the flood? Oh, thank you. Yes, someone said it. It's after the flood. So far, if we're talking about the same race of people, you know, if they're giants, same word used in 6:4, you have the word used twice, and it's on separate sides of the flood. Okay? So Joshua 11, 22. That's not a foolproof case. I know it's not, but you wouldn't want to be held to that standard, but I just think it's an interesting point. Joshua 11, 22. There was none of the Anakims left in the land of the children of Israel, only in Gaza, in Gath, and in Ashdod there remained. All right, so remember the three sons of who were listed in Numbers 13? Anak, right? Okay, good. We're all about equally Hebrew scholars in here. So there was none of the Anakims left, so not even the three sons, except where? Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod, okay? Now that sounds like we need to write that down. Gaza, by the way, that's where the Ethiopian eunuch was ministered to by Philip back after time of Christ. Okay, so Gath, and what was the third one? How do you spell that? D-O-D, got it, Ashdod. So those are the only three places that the sons of Anak are now, right? All right, so let's look at chapter 15 and verse 14. So they went in, they conquested the place, conquered the place. And look at verse 14. Here's Caleb, one of the other two good spies. Who was the other good spy? Joshua. See, Joshua and Caleb, who were the two good spies of the 12 in Numbers 13. Here we are again. Here's Caleb. Now think about this. Almost 50 years later. 50 years later. He's seeing the same people. He's not 35 now. He's 85. I mean, there's something to talk about there, isn't there? Chapter 15, verse 14. Caleb drove thence the three sons of Anak. I've seen you before, and you're going to die. Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak. Isn't that amazing? 50 years later, he sees these huge giants, and he deals with them. It's pretty awesome. All right, so what happens after that? That's chapter 15, verse 14. Drove them. I don't think that means he kills them. It looks like he pushes them away, pushes them out. I don't know. That seems to be, I'm just going to go as far as Scripture does there. So where are the three places that these sons of Anak lived? Gath, Gaza, and Ashdod. So then we go forward to 2 Samuel 21. And when you think of 2 Samuel 21, you should be thinking of someone's life. Whose life would you be thinking about when you think of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel? Samuel, Saul, who else? David, right. And in 1 Samuel 17, we're not going there, we're going to 2 Samuel 21. But as you're going to 2 Samuel 21, think about 1 Samuel 17. Can you do it? Bet you females can. Can anyone else do it? All right. I would have to stop and think, okay? In 1 Samuel 17, David kills someone. Who does he kill? That's right. Boy, I tell you, I'm in a room of smart folks here. All right, so he kills Goliath. And Goliath was from where? Gath. So Goliath is a giant, probably 9 feet, 9 inches tall by a very conservative estimate, using the short cubit again. And he's from Gath, one of the only places that the giants go to. Remember? Way back here in Joshua 11, right? 22. So Goliath is from Gath. Now we're in 2 Samuel 21. 2 Samuel 21. And we're in verse 15. Moreover, the Philistines had yet war again with Israel, and David went down. Now the year is about 1100 BC. Okay, so the flood happens about 3000 BC, give or take. Maybe 2700. Okay, it doesn't really matter when you're that far away. Okay, so somewhere in the late 2000s BC. So we are now about 1,000 years to 1,200 years later. Okay? Well, that's even conservative. About 1,000 to 1,500 years later. Moreover, the Philistines had yet war again with Israel, and David went down and his servants with him. So we're about 1,500 years, give or take, after the flood. And he fought against the Philistines, and David waxed faint, and Ish-bibinab, which was, I need to stand and look in the mirror and say that, which was of the sons of the giant. What giant? Well, let's keep reading. The weight of whose spear weighed 300 shekels of brass in weight. That's heavy. I think I did a calculation one time that was over 75 pounds. I can't remember. But if the head of your spear is that heavy, you are a hoss. All right? He, being girded with a new sword, thought to have slain David, but Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, see, hurry through it, succored him and smote the Philistine and killed him. Then the men of David swear unto him, saying, thou shalt go no more out with us to battle, and now you are a hindrance, that thou quench not the light of Israel. And it came to pass after this that there was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob. Then Sibekai and Hushathite slew Saph, which was of the sons of the giant. You should have your 8-year-old read this stuff from the back seat. It's equally as enjoyable. About every third word, you hear a deep sigh. All right? And there was a battle in Gob with the Philistines, where Elhanan, the son of, dear Lord, Jerorogim, a Bethlehemite, slew the brother of Goliath the Gittite. Remember, Goliath was the Gittite, but he was from where? Gath. The staff of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. And there was yet a battle in Gath, where was a man of great stature that had on every hand 6 fingers. I think he was on Princess Bride, right? On every hand 6. I'm sure those histories intertwined somewhere. Inconceivable. All right. That had on every hand 6 fingers and on every foot 6 toes, 24 in number, and he also was born to the giant. So, Anak, maybe? The giant that they're talking about, because this guy was a brother of Goliath, right? Do you see that? Verse 20, verse 19, verse 20. And when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimea, the brother of David, slew him. These four were born to the giant in Gath and fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. All right. It's clear to me, if I had to guess today, teach this today, which I guess I am, I would say it looks like the giants survived the flood. Genetically, anyways. Now, we don't think that the sons of Noah were giants. That can only leave one path. What does that leave?
Their wives.
So, possibly, if this is the same line, the same genetical lineage, it seems like that it came through one of the wives, and of course, everyone wants to pick on Ham. I have no scriptural proof yet saying it was Ham's wife. I don't. It would be a guess. It would be folklore for me at this point. But it looks like the giants survived the flood, and it looks like it did so genetically through one of the wives of Noah's sons. Yeah, I would say she carried the... Poor Ham. You imagine him being married to a giant. I mean... You're right. You're right. Maybe that's why they needed a 40-foot, 45-foot tall ark with 15-foot stories. Ham's wife. It's a guess. It's a guess that the angels did. But from Luke 8:31, remember we talked about how when Jesus was in Gadara and they were afraid, the demons legion, the demons that was inside the maniac, he said, please do not cast us into the abyss, the deep. And you might remember from 2 Peter 2:4 that the angels that sinned in this case were cast into Tartarus, which seems to be an equivalent to abyss, Tartarus and abyss, the deep. So it seems like they were afraid of experiencing what these folks experienced, these spirits that sinned. It seems like in Luke 8, in the time of Christ, that they, those demons, were afraid of being put in the same place that the angels that sinned here in Genesis 6 were put. So it seems like there was a healthy fear among the ungodly spirits, the fallen angels, to never do what happened in Genesis 6 again. Possibly. Christy. Well, that was the question I said that I can't win. If I say the giants did survive, then someone might ask, well, then why the flood? If I say the giants didn't survive, where'd they come from after the flood? So it's really just what's your best guess? And my best guess is that they survived genetically through one of Noah's daughters-in-law. Okay, last comment. Okay. Yeah, that's a great question for next week. Hang on. Let me read a verse of scripture to you. No, that is a great question, Megan. We've got lots of great thoughts in here, and that's why I need your responses. When I send out an email, I need responses. The question was, is it possible that since Jesus says that the last days before the coming of Christ were like the days of Noah, would we see a resurgence or a reoccurrence of this whole intercourse between sons of God or angels and the daughters of men? Well, let me read an interesting scripture verse to you, please. 1 Timothy 4:1. I'm not going to wait for you to turn, so write it down, please. Now the Spirit speaketh expressly, say that with a lisp, the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, listen to this, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. So, in the last times, there will be seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. So, maybe. Let's have a word of prayer. God, thanks for the opportunity to study your word and find answers. And Lord, we know that these should affect how we act through the week somehow. We should see that you hate sin. Help us to hate sin. Help us to despise even the hint of sin in our lives and to be intolerant of sin in our lives. Help us to throw it out, to first pull the beam out of our eyes so that we can see clearly. And we will thank you for it. In Jesus' name, amen.